pick something you're passionate about. If you're just doing it because there's a business opportunity there, that's going to be tough for those downs that you mentioned, because there are going to be ups, there's going to be downs. And when you're down, if you are not passionate about the company you're creating, the problem you're solving, the mission that you have, it's going to be really hard to get through those downs.
Welcome to MedCider, where you can learn from the brightest founders and CEOs in medical devices and health technology. Join tens of thousands of ambitious doers as we unpack the insights, tactics, and secrets behind the most successful life science startups in the world. Now, here's your host, Scott Nelson.
Hey everyone, it's Scott. In this episode of MedCider, I sat down with Bill Snyder, CEO of Avante Health, a leading digital digestive health company. With over 15 years of experience in healthcare technology, Bill's background includes building and leading national sales efforts at Virta Health, overseeing their health plan practice. Previously, he spent 11 years at Humana in various leadership roles, including vice president of the company's Greater Chicago region. Here for you the key things that we discussed in this conversation. First, as a digital health company, you have to know where your product or service fits in the overall healthcare ecosystem. That way, you know how to interact with other providers and consumers, and in turn, you can connect the dots for your end users about the precise role you play in the care they receive. Second, ensure your product is financially accessible for adoption. That requires you to understand different plans and regulations and demonstrate your product's clinical efficacy and potential for cost savings. Target customers that you can create a clear win-win solution for. Third, show your progress to build trust with potential investors. Network and communicate with them on a regular basis. Focus on sustainable growth and understand your business's unit economics in detail so you can clearly articulate and justify your decisions. All right, before we jump into this episode, I wanted to let you know that the latest edition of MedCider Mentors is now live. We just published Volume 5, which summarizes the key learnings from the most popular MedCider interviews over the last several months with incredible entrepreneurs like Gabriel Jones, CEO of Proprio, Kirsten Carroll, CEO of Can Do Health, Dr. David Albert, founder of AliveCor, Greg Bullington, CEO of Magnolia Medical, and other leaders of some of the hottest startups in our space. Look, it's tough to listen or read every interview that comes out, even the best ones, but there are so many valuable lessons you can pick up from the founders and CEOs that join our program. So that's why we decided to create MedCider Mentors. It's the easiest way for you to learn from the world's best medical device and health technology entrepreneurs in one central place. To check out the latest volume, head over to MedCiderRadio.com/mentors. Premium members get free access to all past and future volumes. If you're not a premium member yet, you should definitely consider signing up. In addition to every volume of MedCider Mentors, you'll get full access to the entire library of interviews dating back to 2010. You'll also be able to see all of our playbooks, which are handpicked collections of the most insightful interviews with the brightest founders and CEOs that join our program. Whether you're looking to master capital fundraising, navigate early stage development, tackle regulatory challenges, understand reimbursement, or position your venture for a meaningful exit, MedCider playbooks have you covered. And last, considering that fundraising can be one of the most daunting tasks for any startup, we created a meticulous database of investors right at your fingertips. Explore a wealth of VC funds, private equity firms, angel groups, and more, all eager to invest in medical device and health technology startups. Access to this database is a premium member exclusive, so don't miss out. Learn more about MedCider Mentors and our premium memberships by visiting MedCiderRadio.com/mentors. All right, without further ado, let's jump into the interview. All right, Bill, welcome to MedCider Radio. Appreciate you coming on, man.
Scott, thanks so much for having me on.
Looking forward to the conversation, learning a little bit more about your personal journey as well as what you're building at Vivante. So with that said, founder CEO of the company, Vivante Health, we'll get into it in more detail. But without getting like too far into the weeds or going line by line on your resume, so to speak, give us a high level sense of kind of where you've been, you know, leading up to starting the company.
Yeah, absolutely. So I grew up in healthcare. So I'm rare in that I spent over a decade at Humana, and that's when they had the leadership rotational programs. Mm-hmm. So right out of undergrad, went to Humana, moved all around with them, and had a great experience and really learned the business of healthcare, which was really interesting. My last role there was managing the Chicago office. It was about a $600 million office for them, and really just learned a lot about the nuances of healthcare, provider contracting, commercialization of solutions, healthcare ecosystem. So it was really eye-opening for me. But I always knew I wanted to do something more entrepreneurial. That's where I was spending kind of my weekends and my evenings a lot of the time. So I was building a solution with a student from Northwestern, and really kind of got a bug for that. And then after Humana, I left to go to an early stage company in the diabetes space, which continued to grow and do incredibly well. And just I really enjoyed watching that founder CEO grow the company. And so I went there to help with commercialization and health plan partnerships. And then really was interested in the digestive health space. That's where I knew I could have a bigger impact. And so that's really why we started Vivante, was to help all those individuals who are suffering from chronic GI conditions.
Very, very, very cool. And I could definitely relate to like your early move in your career to Humana and through, you know, getting the opportunity to experience different functions inside a large strategic. I had that same opportunity at Covidien. And it's oftentimes I emphasize that with other like younger folks in their career of like, don't, you may feel kind of you know, frustrated by the kind of the bureaucracy, the slow moving nature of a large organization like that. But if you take advantage, if you're proactive about it in your career, there's like so many learning opportunities. Right. And so it's like, you know, don't let the frustration get the better of you, you know, be proactive about those experiences, because they're oftentimes, you know, invaluable, especially considering kind of what you're doing now, understanding like how an organization like Humana or any other payer, for that example, how this stuff gets paid for, right, really, really matters, you know, in today's healthcare environment. So I'm sure, you're nodding your head as I'm riffing here, but yeah, I can imagine that's extremely valuable to what you're building at Vivante. So with that said, your core technology, GI Thrive, tell us a little bit kind of what it is, like what you're trying to do, and let's frame that up as if I'm freshman or sophomore in high school. I really am not familiar with the space. Kind of give me a high level overview.
Yeah, absolutely. So at Vivante, our mission is to revolutionize digital health gut first. So we work with individuals who suffer from chronic digestive conditions and the related symptoms. And that chronic digestive bucket is massive. And so that includes things like ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease, irritable bowel syndrome, GERD, and a whole host of other conditions and symptoms that are associated with GI conditions. So for me personally, I saw family members and loved ones struggle from these conditions throughout their entire lives. And so I know what the patient experience is like for somebody who suffers from these. And so typically, you're going to start by having some symptoms. That might be nausea, it might be bloating, it might be chronic constipation. And oftentimes people don't know where to go. And so in this day and age, what they're doing is they're Googling, they're trying to find a solution, they're trying to figure out what to do. Maybe they're taking over-the-counter medication to try and get those symptoms, that symptom relief. And then at some point, they tend to say, okay, it's time for me to go see a provider. And they don't even know what type of provider to go to. Do they go to their primary care physician? Do they go to a specialist? So maybe they go see a provider, and the providers who are doing great work have limited time. And so oftentimes, they can only see the patient for a short stint. And maybe they refer them on to a specialist. Maybe that specialist has limited time, and there's still difficult conditions to diagnose. And so oftentimes they're putting on, maybe they're prescribed a high cost biologic, or maybe they go through an invasive scope that they may not need. But oftentimes they go through all that process and still don't have relief. They're still having those symptoms and they don't really know where to turn. So it's a unique set of conditions because there is no specific biomarker. There's no one test. There's no easy diagnosis. And you couple that with the fact that when you're talking about GI conditions, unfortunately, there's stigma associated with those conditions as well. It's not easy to talk about, and people aren't really excited to talk about what's going on in the bathroom. And so that leads to feelings of isolation. It leads to increased stress, increased anxiety, feelings of loneliness. And so that's the patient experience with a lot of these GI conditions. So kind of the three things, right? Very difficult to diagnose. People incur a lot of costs and a lot of pain going through that process. And people feel alone and isolated. So at Vivante, we said, hey, we really want to change the way this care is delivered. And so we've developed a platform where individuals can come in. We do a quick clinical intake. When I say come in, they go through our app or our web platform. So it's fully remote, fully virtual. And we ask them some clinical questions about what they're experiencing. And we do two things with that information. First, we identify the risk of the patient, and then we build an evidence-based clinical pathway that is personalized based upon their condition and or symptom. And then we help connect them to our care team, which is made up of health coaches, registered dietitians, gastroenterologists, and internal medicine specialists, so that we can create this personalized experience to decrease their symptoms and get them feeling better.
That's a really, really thoughtful overview. I can tell you that you've explained that a number of times, right, to other folks like me. But this whole area of like GI health, like I can totally relate because my mom spent her entire career almost as a nurse within kind of the GI function, mostly doing scope procedures, like you mentioned. So I have a certain, I kind of grew up around that, right, like kind of hearing about these stories. And then, interesting enough, one of the companies I previously founded called Juve, even though we grew the backs of that company, we grew that company really more positioned as a kind of a health and anti-aging sort of longevity kind of like therapy, if you will. A lot of our early adopters were people that suffered from autoimmune diseases, specifically like gut and had gut related issues, And so it's like, it speaks to what you just mentioned, like really difficult, not only to diagnose, but like, not great solutions out there, right? In terms of drugs, biologics, devices, et cetera. So yeah, I'm definitely tracking with you. I imagine there's a lot of people listening to this that are probably like, yeah, I know a few folks in my network that have had some similar issues.
100%, Scott. I think the big thing too, just like you said, I mean, 1 in 4 Americans suffer from a chronic digestive condition, which is crazy. Because when you think about that in terms of scope, I mean, that's one of the reasons that we built this is it's a massive problem. And there's so many people that are suffering and so many suffering in silence because they don't know where to go. So you're absolutely right. Everyone has a loved one, a friend that's gone through this, if not they themselves.
Yep. No doubt. And we'll get into kind of the journey of and what you've been through kind of building the company to date. But for everyone listening, vivantehealth.com is the website. So VIVANTE health.com, vivantehealth.com. We'll link to it in the full kind of write up on MedCyter, as well as Bill's LinkedIn profile as well. But if you don't get to it, that's the website where you can learn a little bit more about this program. Because who knows? I mean, you may be kind of suffering from one of these issues that Bill just referenced as well, these GI related issues. So with that said, before we kind of step inside the old time machine and kind of go back and learn about the past handful of years or so. Building Vivante. Give us a sense for kind of where the company's at. I mean, you're in full scale commercialization. It looks like it partnered with, I know, some larger plans and employers. So yeah, give us a high level sense of kind of where the company's at.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're really fortunate. We're seeing a tremendous amount of growth. The first thing that we focus on is member outcomes, and we've been impacting members across the country. We're a B2B2C model, so we sell through large self-funded employers and health plans. And we're over 100 employees. We did our Series B in funding last year, and we're definitely at that growth stage where we're just continuing to impact more and more lives across the country, which is super exciting because we get to hear that patient experience and see those improved clinical outcomes in every state, which is really exciting for me and the team.
Oh yeah, to kind of be at that at full scaling up and seeing like what you've built like impact probably a lot of people in a positive way is gotta be pretty fun to experience. Before I guess we go too deep. Just if someone is interested, right? I mean, this MedCyter is primarily meant for like to educate other founders, CEOs, leader people in leaderships across med tech, digital health, etc. But I gotta think there's a lot of people. You just mentioned that stat, like one in four Americans like suffer from some sort of GI related disease. If I'm listening to this and like that actually sounds pretty interesting for myself or maybe a friend or a family member, is this like generally covered by insurance then? I mean, if I have like a plan with Blue Cross or United or whatever, is it in a lot of scenarios, covered and reimbursed?
So today on the individual plans, we're working on that. But to date, it's mostly focused on the jumbo employers and jumbo commercial space, even with the plans. So I would say for anyone listening, if you are working with your plan and you want to say, hey, I just learned about this great organization that I would love to have their benefit covered, we'll talk to any health plan. And we're seeing the health plans have been great. They've been great partners to us. And that's where we're seeing a ton of traction, a ton of interest. And so I think that that's only going to continue to mature. So our definitely long-term plan will be available to people on the individual level through their plan sponsor. But today it's a little bit more targeted towards those larger employers.
Employers. Okay. Got it. And is there, if I go to Vivante Health, is there like a list of like employers on the site? I guess I didn't even look. I probably should have that were,
yeah, we do.
Okay.
Yeah,
you do. Okay.
We do have most of them, not all. But you can always check with us. And again, if you're at a large employer, you say, hey, I'd like to even recommend this just to my employer. We're happy to help supply information and get on a call with the employer as well.
Cool. Sounds good. Well, there you go. If you're listening to this and interested and, reach out to maybe your HR folks at your organization to see, or reach out to the Vivante team to see if if this is covered. So with that said, let's maybe spend the next, you know, 20, maybe 30 minutes or so kind of going back in time and learning really like how you've built this company and are experiencing the success. Cause you just mentioned that Series B raise of, I think it was 31 million or so, something like that. That's no easy feat. I mean, it's, you know, kudos to you for getting that done. I mean, there's not just a lot of companies in general in healthcare that are, you know, knocking off those types of milestones. But the first question I've got for you is, I have a hunch, and I'm probably pretty right, that like the GI Thrive program as it stands right now looks a lot different, is more refined than, you know, what it was obviously when you first started the company, but even in the early years. So give us a sense kind of for like looking back, and thinking about kind of the evolution of the program from sort of an alpha stage to a beta stage, et cetera. Like, what were maybe some key things that you picked up on kind of during that time developing the program to where it's at today?
Yeah. So it's a good question. I'd say the number one biggest thing that I've learned is the importance of integrating within the healthcare ecosystem. So for digital health companies, I think that you see a lot of great products come to market, great solutions. But if there's not an understanding of where you fit within that healthcare ecosystem, it can be really trying for founders and CEOs. So I think that's probably the biggest point that I always bring up, is the ability to understand how do you interact? How do you keep a focus on the member and the patient, but then think about how do you interact then with the plan, with the other providers, with the other digital solutions that the member might be working with today? So I think that's really key. And then I think the second piece that I always talk about is when we think about product innovation, is just staying connected to your members, thinking about what is it that we're missing. We take product feedback really seriously. We're always talking to our members and trying to gain information in terms of what more could we be doing for them and what are we not thinking about. And that really informs how we build our product, is listening to those members and thinking about where we see those gaps in care that we can help close today.
That's really, really, really good feedback. And especially like, you know, circling back around to your first point about like just understanding like where you fit within the healthcare ecosystem. I'm sure you know, just being connected to other entrepreneurs, you probably see and hear about like a fair number of like actually really, really good ideas that could make a lot of sense. But you take a step back and you're like, I don't know. I'm not entirely sure like how this fits into workflow, how this displaces an existing kind of way of treating a patient or whatever. And so important to kind of understand that from the outset of like, hey, it could be a really good idea, but if there's going to be a ton of friction just to understand kind of where you even fit, that's going to be a bit of a tough road to haul, you know?
Definitely. Yeah. It's not a big problem. If you're not impacting a lot of people and improving something significantly that you can point to, it's really difficult to break in.
Yeah, no doubt. And especially, you know, I mean, for those listening, if you're pitching your idea, right, regardless of who the audience is, and it's a struggle to sort of connect the dots for that person, that, I mean, I always look as a signal, right? I mean, I think you should probably take a step back, and it could be, you know, the product or the idea or whatever you're working on, but it also could be just the story around how you're like, you know, what you're telling and kind of what you're doing. But the idea of like not struggling, right, to connect the dots for someone, I think is really important. But Bill, your other point about like just being close to the customer, it's interesting. I was chatting about this with like, maybe it was maybe, I don't know, 3-4 weeks ago with one of our advisors at Fastwave. And we were talking about this company that, you know, did exceptionally well, recently exited for a very large number. And I was like, I always heard good things about that senior leadership team. I was like, what were they doing right? Like, what did you notice as a physician? And he was like, the one thing that always stood out to me was the CEO. And this is a publicly traded company at the time that's exited to another publicly traded company. And he was like, the CEO, despite how big the organization was getting, always made a point of like on a monthly basis going out like in the field, right? And kind of being in the trenches, like with the customers. And that sounds kind of so basic, but like, I mean, you probably know a lot of C-suite kind of founder CEOs that just get out of that habit. And it's like, man, it's such a forcing yourself to kind of get in the weeds, you know, so critical, you know?
Definitely. It's a contact sport, you know, it's out on the road. It's 100%. I mean, like I am always, it's a lot of flights and a lot of traveling all over. And that's important. That's what helps me think about the next stage of the business, is when I'm coming out of meetings, talking to three partners, talking to members, talking to clients. That's what really helps me say, okay, this is what's next. This is where we need to go. I think I totally agree. You got to be out meeting with folks and getting that feedback on an ongoing basis.
Yep. And I mean, it is one of the things. I mean, all of us get so busy, right, with whatever we're doing, some sort of next project, next initiative, et cetera. But like, if, I don't know, it's always a good idea to kind of reflect back at the end of the quarter and be like, how much time I've actually spent, like, with my end users, right? With you know, sort of to your point, in the contact sport, making contact, right? So, such a good point. But let's talk a little bit about and we touched on it a little bit, like the model with Vivante, you know, and how you've been able to collaborate and build relationships with employers. I think and I can't remember the name of the company, but I had a couple entrepreneurs on. It was probably maybe a year ago or so. We were talking about how they were working on this new device that was really, it was really compelling, but it wasn't covered or reimbursed yet, right? So they were actually getting more traction going direct to employers, right? So you guys have obviously done a phenomenal job there. I'm sure your experience, you know, broad experience at Humana probably had something to do with this, but give us a sense for kind of how, if someone's listening to this and they're like, I want to go in that direction that makes all the sense in the world. How do I even go about it? Like, what would you kind of advise them on how do they even start kind of beginning to work with employers and maybe even health plans for that matter?
Yeah, I think, so I do think going back to that idea, there's a lot of really interesting and valuable products that I think are being built, but sometimes they don't understand that healthcare ecosystem. They don't understand kind of the purchasing journey and the partnership journey. And so my big recommendation would be, you know, learn from those around you, leverage peer network, or hire those individuals. If you don't have that core expertise, it's really important to understand how that works, because it's intricate. And you've seen big organizations try and get into healthcare. You've seen the headlines of people saying, we're going to change healthcare. And they've tried, they're like, whoa, this is really hard and really unique. And so I do think that there's a lot of value. It's great to have the fresh entrepreneurial, hey, let's come in and see what we can do here. But I think you also need to have those partners who understand the ecosystem well and understand what reimbursement looks like. You also need to make sure, if you're not a clinical founder, that you have a really strong clinical team, because for us, you know, patient safety is number one. That's paramount. And I think that we've seen organizations out there that don't take that seriously enough. And for us, that's something that we don't bend on. So that's always my advice, is make sure you've got a really strong clinical team around you to set those clinical protocols to make sure that patient safety is paramount. And then number two, think about that ecosystem, learn from your network, bring people in who understand it, because that is so key to being able to commercialize and grow in this space.
Got it. Yeah. So important, right? Just to, again, kind of to your point earlier about just sort of getting in the weeds, right? Making contact. But in this case, it's like, you know, making contact with employers, health plans to kind of understand, you know, what's valuable to them, right? How are they thinking about these decisions and whether to adopt a certain solution, you know, like GI Thrive or any other, you know, treatment modality for that matter.
Absolutely. Yeah. And like, there's different business spaces, right? You, when you think about a health plan, you've got the commercial population. In that, you've got fully insured, you've got self-funded, you've got Medicare Advantage, you've got Medicaid, you've got dual eligible. So there's all different rules and regulations. There's different things that you can do. There's different things that they're looking for in those different populations. So for people to really understand that is pretty important if you're really looking to go into digital health and distribute in that way. If you're looking for partners with self-funded employers and health plans, you really need to know that business.
Yeah. And your success kind of working with directly with employers, do you see that as a trend that's only going to continue, right? Whether it's a digital health solution, whether it's a hardware kind of, you know, traditional device-based solution, do you see the kind of this idea of working more directly with employers? We're only moving closer to that sort of environment.
I think so. I think that there's a lot of really innovative employers out there that are really dedicated to creating benefits for their team members that are super attractive, that help with lowering the cost of healthcare, but also improving productivity, well-being. So I think that will always be there. And it's great because you have these innovative benefits leaders and total rewards leaders that are looking at the market and that are saying, hey, we really want to have an impact for our employees, which has been absolutely phenomenal. I also think there's a lot of things coming into market. And so they wear a lot of hats. They've got a lot on their shoulders. And so they are getting some point fatigue. And so I think it's important, again, going back to the ecosystem, you know, we've got great partnerships where we can say, hey, we'll make it easy for you. We know how to integrate into your benefits ecosystem today. Let's make it simple. And that's something that's really key, is making it simple for those leaders, because they do a lot of those organizations. So I do think it'll continue, but my message to entrepreneurs is always think about how much work they have on their plate and make it as simple as possible. Help them make that decision for their employees.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really, really good point. It reminds me of, I was listening to a podcast recently with, Justin Klein, he's an MD by background, but he's one of the founders and managing directors at, Vinsana, which is a med tech. I think they primarily invest in med tech, but pretty well-known venture capital firm. And I can't remember what the podcast that he was on, but he was talking about this issue, and it was more sort of specific to devices, but I think it applies where you've got these really novel solutions, right? Whether it's a digital health solution or a device, and you know, there's mechanisms in place, with like breakthrough device designation as example, to take advantage of like early coverage and reimbursement with Medicare. But the reality that the problem is that you still got a lot of innovative solutions that are being developed. And like at the end of sort of the road, when FDA puts their stamp of approval on it or whatever, and you're ready to kind of like, you know, help people get access to this technology, no one's going to pay for it, right? And had this interesting conversation, but it reminded me of what you just mentioned. Like one avenue, if you're listening to this, one avenue may be, you know, go directly to employers, right? If it's a novel technology that their employees would really benefit from, that's an avenue to potentially pursue. But I think the important point is like how do you make it as easy as possible for them to, you know, adopt? You know, that's so crucial.
Absolutely, Scott. And I think like the two things that I think about is like show clinical outcomes and cost savings at scale. Number one, like if you can go out and show them, hey, we're going to take costs out of the system for you. We're going to get your members feeling better. And then two is that ease of integration. We know how to do it. We're going to take the work off of your plate. We've got a team that can help educate the members about the availability of this and show them that there's this great benefit that is going to get them feeling better and is going to reduce their healthcare costs as well as the plan sponsor. It's those two things that I think we'll really win the day when it comes to working with employers and health plans.
Yeah. It's got to work, and there's got to be some sort of economic component to it, right? I mean, like two crucial factors, but surprisingly, again, a lot, it's just good to reemphasize, I think, that to other folks that are listening is like, you've got to be, yes, entry into the game is like your thing has to work, right? It has to solve a need in a compelling way, hopefully. And it's got to be efficacious. But like, if you're not ignoring, if you're ignoring like the economic component of that, that's a huge, huge miss, you know. But on that, let's talk a little bit about kind of your approach to sort of demonstrating the benefit of GI Thrive and your solution. Because I think some people that are listening to this that maybe even come from like pure play med tech would be like, oh, it's a digital health platform. You don't have to care as much about clinical data. But obviously, you obviously took a much different approach, and you're substantiating your solution with a lot of clinical evidence. So how have you kind of, maybe let's start with like why you think that's important. And then two, like how have you kind of gone about kind of like building out that, you know, that kind of clinical strategy?
Hey everyone, let's take a quick break to catch you up on Fastwave Medical, the company I co-founded and lead as CEO. We're developing multiple intravascular lithotripsy systems, or IVL for short, for a market size of over $10 billion. So you may remember the exclusive round of capital I told you we were going to carve out for Fastwave insiders in the cardiovascular space. Well, due to the overwhelming demand, we blew through our cap in just a few weeks and had to close it down much earlier than expected. The incredibly high interest in this exclusive fundraise exceeded even our own expectations. But in retrospect, it sort of makes sense. Here's why. First, Shockwave Medical, which is the only IVL player in town, has a market cap of close to $10 billion. Second, we've designed Fastwave systems to be faster, better, and more efficient, and to disrupt this monopolized category by giving physicians more IVL options to choose from. Third, we've already secured two non-provisional patents from the USPTO, one of which was granted in 6 months, which is almost unheard of in the medtech space. We may open up another private fundraise in the future, so if you're interested in joining our waiting list to invest in one of the hottest cardiovascular therapies, head over to fastwavemedical.com/invest and enter your email. Again, that's fastwavemedical.com/invest. All right, let's get back to the rest of the conversation.
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think proving out the clinical efficacy of your solution is paramount because everything that you do when you're in healthcare should be about patient safety and improving outcomes. And so I think it's essential that you can showcase that. And so for us, that's definitely where we started. It's can we have a clinical impact? And at the end of the day, if you're going through those studies and you find out that you're not going to have a clinical impact, that's okay. But then it's time to say, okay, we should do something different. If we're not positively impacting the members that we serve. So that was kind of the foundation of what we did at Vivante. And we started simple. We said, let's look at the patient population. Let's monitor with a pre-post analysis how we do in terms of reducing symptoms and get them feeling better. And the way that we set it up was, let's start with patient reported outcomes, because those are the easiest for us to get. Let's look at financial outcomes, because you can use third party claims to start to look at the difference in indifference. And then lastly, let's look at those core clinical outcomes and start to do the clinical measurements that we know we can stand behind when we're talking to other providers and other clinical governing bodies. And so that was kind of our three-pronged approach. And then the other thing that I would always say is that type of clinical rigor should always be part of the company DNA, and you should always be thinking about what more can you do. So we've got a couple publications that we're waiting to hear on now that we're really excited about. And so they've been submitted. And so we're once we get the feedback, we'll definitely be promoting those. But it's those types of things where it's not a one-time thing. It's ongoing. It's how do we continue to look at the clinical evidence and the impact that we can have for members. So I think that's always the thing I tell people is, you know, it's a journey. It's and that should always be part of your DNA as a healthcare company.
Yeah. Yeah. So like once you receive, you know, maybe regulatory approval or some sort of milestone like that, it's like, you know, some folks would be like, oh, we're done. We're done with the gathering of clinical data, but that's, you know, far from the end of the road. I think if you want to truly be successful.
Definitely. And the other thing I'd say about that, Scott, is you should have that clinical rigor in your DNA. You should also have, when you're talking about patient data, you've got to talk about security. And that's for us, we're HITRUST certified, we're SOC 2 certified. And that's, again, in our DNA, we talk as a company about the importance of keeping our members' data safe. And that's not a one-time thing. That's ongoing at every point and every day. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's the type of DNA that you need to build into the company so that you can really keep that patient data safe for the long term.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the methodical kind of approach to you, that three-prong approach of like, you know, let's first focus on patient reported outcomes, maybe a little bit lower barrier, easier to collect, you know, not as like burdensome, you know, in terms of, you know, cost, resourcing, et cetera. Then obviously the second one being financial, which, you know, we just touched on, right? That being so crucial. I mean, you need your thing, your product solution needs to be clinically efficacious, but if you're ignoring the economic input, so vital to the equation. And then, you know, circling back around and kind of substantiating with like maybe more robust, right, clinical biomarkers. I really like kind of the methodical approach. And I think that applies to like, regardless of whether you're working on a digital health solution, a device, et cetera, kind of thinking about like the laddering up sort of the hurdle to cross, so to speak, right? And you don't have to jump all in, right, with the most cost intensive, pursuit, you know, unless it's, you know, required by regulators, but, you know, that more methodical kind of, you know, inching towards like, you know, taking on bigger, you know, bigger clinical initiatives, I think makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And like even for us, that was aligned with our product development as well. You know, we started with, I would say, lower acuity members. And as we added more clinical rigor to our solution, we were able to work more and more with higher acuity patients. And so it was a structured approach that allowed us to scale and grow while we were collecting a lot of clinical information and continuing to prove outcomes. And so that was kind of the method for our growth, which worked really well.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt. I'm sure you probably learned a lot as part of that kind of that ongoing development efforts by prioritizing the early collection of clinical data. So good stuff. Let's talk a little bit about financing, right? You mentioned earlier, we touched on it, that this recent Series B round of capital. And was that late last year? I can't remember exactly.
It was August.
Okay. So rough Q3 of 23. We're recording this in early 24. But I mean, even kudos to you. I mean, $31 million raised last year, in the dearth of the fundraising environment. Man, that is probably not for the faint of heart. But obviously, it's a demonstration, right, to the team you build out, the commercial traction, the product itself, et cetera. So when you think about your experiences across the board raising capital and getting to that even that point last August, raising a significant round of capital for Vivante, is there anything that stands out that like you're doing differently now versus maybe a couple years ago, or, you know, alternatively, you know, what's worked really well, I guess, for you over the years, when it comes to fundraising?
I'll kind of mention two things. The first is it is pure business fundamentals. And so that comes down to unit economics of the business. So painting the big picture of this is a really massive market. We can have a really big impact here. But at the same time, we've got top line revenue growth with really healthy gross margins, and we've got a path to profitability. So I think that that's really important, and it's different from when, if you were raising capital a couple of years ago, where people said growth at all costs, how quickly can you grow? And here you really want to show that you're good stewards of the capital in the business, you're utilizing it for the right reasons. And again, that you are figuring out, okay, we can become a profitable company. And so I think that's the key piece is the fundamentals. The process itself, I think, is really important. When I talk to peers and other founders who are maybe just starting out and they're trying to figure out how do I fundraise, the big thing there is the process. And it's, you can't go out and do scattershot and take every call. You know, you really need to, you know, create your list, leverage your network, talk to the folks you know and trust, put that list together, and start that fundraising when you have capital. You know, for anyone who's raising capital, the best time to go raise capital is after you've just raised. Develop those relationships and start getting them kind of on your side and let them follow your journey, so that when you're going into your next round, it's not a, here, let me introduce you to my company for the first time because I need capital. It's, yeah, you're getting my quarterly updates. You know what we said we'd do. Now we've executed on that plan and beyond. And so then they're excited, and they already know you and they know the team. And so I think those are the two things. Number one is those core fundamentals of scaling a business with an eye on profitability while you grow. And then number two is that process where it's not something that you do when it's time to raise. It's ongoing, and you're building those relationships at all points.
Yeah, those are such good feedback, right? The process that you mentioned, it reminds me of a conversation I had on, I think it was maybe last summer-ish timeframe. Sean Morris, he's in the Midwest, I think St. Louis area, kind of serial entrepreneur, but he was, you know, he used the acronym, you know, always be raising, right? or always be capitalizing. I said he's ABCs, always be capitalizing. But it's so true, and it's just kind of the nature of the beast, right? Is like, you know, if you're on the, you know, if you're getting to the end of your runway, right, and just starting the process, man, that is it's gonna be a tough rowing, you know, especially in today's environment. But that process, man, that's so crucial, being intentional about it, like you mentioned.
It is. And the other thing, Scott, that I would say to entrepreneurs, founders, it allows you also then the optionality to bring in great partners. And it gives you that time, because yes, they're vetting you, but you also need to be vetting those partners. And we've been super fortunate to have incredible partners in the company. And that matters so much, because then you have the support of those folks. And so we've been really fortunate. And that just makes such a big difference.
Oh man, so much. And I think that I can't stress that point enough, because I've been through this as well. Sometimes it can feel so desperate, right? You just need to get the next check in, the next raise, you know, the next round close, et cetera. And you'll kind of take money from wherever you get, right? But if you're listening to this and kind of in the throes of fundraising, don't make that mistake, because it can be so detrimental. And pragmatically, what you'll end up doing is, if you raise money from the wrong set of investors, you'll waste the next 18 months, 2 years, right? Only to end up with a really, really bad cap table, really, you know, investors that are just, will make your life miserable. Like, you know, that's just, go into that eyes wide open if you're willing to say yes, right, to investors that, you know, aren't going to be a good fit, right, for your business. So really, really, I'm glad you brought that up. Really, so crucial.
100%. I had one of our, like, some of our earliest investors were some of my, like, they helped me through that process. You know, they really helped me learn it, understand it, develop it. And it was incredibly helpful.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No doubt. But the other point that resonated with me too, is like your comment around the fundamentals. Right. And I think, anyone listening would have been like, well, yeah, of course. Right. But the flip, right, from just a couple of years ago, when now the folk, you need to have a clear path to profitability, right? Your margins need to make sense, your runway needs to make sense, because this, you know, we aren't living in a ZIRP environment anymore where it's like endless growth and, you know, people are going to pay for that. It's like, no, that's not that. I mean, maybe that will happen again, you know, sometime, and as the kind of economic cycles come and fold, but like, for the foreseeable future, there's a, I mean, everyone's looking at the numbers again, right? And they've got to make sense. And so that's I think a really, really important point for other folks to remember as they're fundraising. If it's going to take you 10, 15 years to get to profitability, I mean, that's another kind of really, really tough road ahead, you know?
Absolutely. And the big thing that the feedback I got from some of the investors that I spoke to was, wow, you really know your numbers. Mm-hmm. And I think that, but I'm sure most of the CEOs and entrepreneurs listening to this know that as well. But it was interesting because the feedback that I got was some know some of them, but not all of them. And it's like, you better know your numbers in and out. Like, mm-hmm. you better know every aspect of your business from a KPI perspective and where you're going and how you're going to get there. Mm-hmm. So if you're talking about, hey, we're going to be able to improve our margin profile, here's the three ways we're going to do it. Boom, boom, boom. And hey, okay, how much capital do you want? You better know exactly about how much. I mean, it can be a range, but this is why. This is the use case for it. We're going to invest this percentage in growing our technology because we know that expanding our platform, it's going to increase our capability to deliver clinical outcomes. You better know how much you're going to spend on marketing, how much you're going to spend on commercial. You better know your CAC to LTV ratios. Mm-hmm. If you're improving your ARPU because you're increasing your price, you better know the market already knows that we're doing this. And we've been able to show that that increased price will be tolerated by the market. So it's that level of detail that when you're raising, you'd be able to, you need to answer all those questions. Mm-hmm. It's really important.
Yeah, yeah, I'm glad you touched on that because I'm sure you've been in at the, on the other side of the table, like getting pitched. You know, whether it's an investment or whether it's some other thing, right? Pitch for an idea. Yeah. If the person presenting doesn't understand and can't answer your questions definitively, precisely, quickly, and they're always kind of, well, let me follow up on that. That's the response. Like, that's not a good look. You know what I mean? And from my perspective, even hearing you kind of touch on that, a lot of that comes through practice, right? And pitch. And again, this doesn't have to be a pitch to invest in your company. It could be a pitch for anything, really. Is like doing it enough, and you may have a really good first pitch, but you're naturally going to like see a lot of different questions throughout that process. And so just practicing it and talking to a lot of people, and ideally starting with kind of like people that are, you know, it's a sort of a low risk environment before you kind of work up the chain, so to speak. Right. But yeah, I mean, to your point, that makes a ton of difference when the person presenting understands like down to the detail and can answer, you know, swiftly and quickly and precisely, you know? So,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Cool. I want to get to the rapid fire portion of this question. I know we only have about, you know, 5 minutes left or so, but, when you think about like the past, you know, you founded a company when, and was it 20 or 21?
Something yeah, like so, that. I mean, so this company was 21.
21. Okay. So, you know, a little over three years into it or so. When you think about kind of this lot, anything else that you want to bring up or touch on that you don't think we covered already?
I think, you know, for us, it's always like, hey, this is a massive problem. And so I think that's what's really interesting mm-hmm. for us is we knew that it was massive, and we knew that there was a huge opportunity for change that we could impact. So I think that's super key for us. The second thing that I would mention in terms of why we've had so much success, so much expansion, is our team. Mm-hmm. We've built this incredible group of people who are very mission driven. Everyone at Vivante has either suffered from a GI condition or has had a loved one who suffered from a GI condition. Mm-hmm. And that makes it incredible because there's so much natural alignment and people are willing to go the extra mile because they know that we're having an impact on the member. Mm-hmm. So I think the only two things that I mentioned is just a reminder that this is a massive problem we've been able to solve or been able to impact. And then the second one that we didn't really touch on, but that I think about every day, is we've got this incredible team of people that are mission driven and dedicated, which makes it easier. It makes it a lot more fun when you're all working on something that you're passionate about and love.
Oh yeah, yeah, no doubt. Especially knowing full well that in a younger company, you're undoubtedly going to experience a lot of ups and downs, and you're going to, you know, be battling, trying to cross some big hurdles. And if you're not, you don't have some of that underlying kind of foundational belief in kind of what you're doing, and it doesn't get you excited, it can make such a big difference. Yeah, yeah, no doubt. Again, for everyone listening, Vivante Health is the website. So if you're listening to this, and I'm almost undoubtedly sure that you probably know, maybe you yourself have experienced a GI related issue. You know someone that's in your sphere, right? That has Vivante Health, VIVANTE Health, VivanteHealth.com. You can learn, go there and check out the company in a little bit more detail. But really cool. It's a space that I kind of personally interested in. I totally understand like just the sheer size of it, right? It's a huge, huge problem, right? So really, really cool to see that you guys are making a dent, right? And trying to solve for this. So with that said, let's jump to the rapid fire portion of the interview. Questions are rapid fire. You can answer in that fashion. If you want to expound a little bit, that's totally fine. But first question on the docket, when you think about the next year ahead, right? We're recording this in early 24, you know, looking, kind of thinking through the kind of the rest of the year, what's most exciting? What's coming up that you're really, really thrilled about?
For us at Vivante, it's just more lives being impacted. We're having such strong growth right now, but growth to us, that doesn't mean like just top line revenue growth. That means more lives that we're changing. And I'm really excited because we're just having huge expansion across the country right now.
Oh, that's cool. Okay. Since starting the company back in 21, what's the most important or surprising thing that you've learned?
I don't know that I'd say it's a reinforcement. Mm. And the reinforcement is teams matter. Like the people that you work with matter a ton. And again, the reason we're having success is the team that we've built. And so I think that's just reinforcing that for entrepreneurs and for CEOs that are going out to build an organization, I mean, don't give on that. Make sure you find the right people to work with, because it's made my job incredibly easier to have such a talented group of individuals.
Man, it can make all the difference in the world, right? I mean, not to say that you could slog through something with a kind of a mediocre group of people, but it does make all the difference in the world when you have a team. And it sounds so cliche too, but it's, if you haven't experienced kind of the opposite, you know, and I think a lot of people have, right? But it does. It makes such a big difference when you've got a really, really solid team. And I think you're probably aware, just like I am, of like, you hear other like entrepreneurs or founders or leaders express how rigorous they are when they hire someone. And it's like, geez, God, that seems like a lot of like, that's a really, but it's for a reason, right? Oftentimes, you know, so.
100%. Yeah. When people interview with Vivante, we always thank them up front because they have a pretty rigorous process.
Yeah, that's good.
But it's great. It helps us build this incredible team.
That's a good tip. That's great. All right. Third question. Let's presume we're in Chicago, downtown on a nice summer evening in Chicago. And you just got done presenting to a group of, you know, life science entrepreneurs, whether it's medtech, biotech, digital health, et cetera. Is there one thing that you'd want to, you know, really make sure they leave the event with, that they really need to understand to be, you know, hopefully successful with their own venture?
This is again going to sound obvious, but I think it does go back to pick something you're passionate about. If you're just doing it because there's a business opportunity there, that's going to be tough for those downs that you mentioned, because there are going to be ups, there's going to be downs. And when you're down, if you are not passionate about the company you're creating, the problem you're solving, the mission that you have, it's going to be really hard to get through those downs. And so again, it sounds a little cliche, but I truly believe that you got to be passionate about what you're building. Otherwise it's going to be too hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Startups are, even at your scale, right? And you're scaling up. It's just, it's hard at every stage. Right. If you pick something that you're not really interested in, it's going to be that much harder. All right. Last question, Bill, on the list. If you had the chance to go back to, you know, maybe mid to late 20s, is there anything you tell yourself, you know, from a professional standpoint?
You know, I think when I was younger, I probably didn't lead with as much empathy. And I think that over time, I've tried to bring that more into my leadership style. I think that you got to remember people have stuff going on in their lives that you don't know about, that they maybe sometimes aren't always sharing or bringing to work. And so I think that over my career, I've really learned how important it is to be empathetic to those that you're working with. And so I think that's something that I probably didn't do enough of when I was younger. And I would caution myself to say, hey, lead with empathy. You never know what's going on in people's lives. So make sure that you're supportive and helping people through things when you can.
Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff. Good way to wrap up the interview. What I'm hearing you say is like, the job is not the end all be all, right? You know, I mean, there could be other things, you know, going on in that person's life. No, it's good. Good way to wrap up the conversation. VivanteHealth.com is the website. We'll link to it in the full write-up on MedSider. If you're new to the program and listen this far, those summary write-ups of these conversations are meant to kind of be a support, right? To kind of a lot of the insights that that Bill showed throughout this conversation. But VivanteHealth, VIVANTE Health.com is the website where you can learn more about the company that Bill and his team are building. So thanks a ton for coming on the program, Bill. I know it's getting a little bit later there on a Friday afternoon. You were gracious enough to give us about an hour. So really, really appreciate your time.
I enjoyed it. Thanks for having me on, Scott.
Yeah. Thanks again. I'll have you hold on the line. But for everyone listening, appreciate your attention as always. Until the next episode of MedSider goes live, everyone take care.
Hey, it's Scott again. One quick thing before you go. You see, I love bringing you insightful conversations with the best founders and CEOs of medical device and health technology startups. But here's the thing. I'd be super grateful if you could help me reach even more ambitious doers who share our passion. So if you found value in this podcast, if you found yourself nodding your head while listening, or if you simply enjoy what we're doing with MedSider, please take a moment to leave us a review. It's super easy. Just open your Apple Podcasts app or the podcast app of your choice, search for our show, and scroll down to the ratings and reviews section. Leave your honest thoughts and hit that 5-star rating if you think we're worthy. Your feedback is incredibly important, and it's the best way to ensure we keep bringing you awesome discussions with leading founders and CEOs. So take a moment to be a good friend and leave that review today. As always, thanks for being a part of our journey and for helping MedSider continue to grow and evolve. Your support is greatly appreciated. All right, enough talk about reviews. Stay tuned for another informative episode coming at you soon.